You're listening to the Zandbergen Report, where wealth strategies and investment wisdom collide with Bart Zandbergen, your distinguished host and certified financial planner.
Welcome to the Zandbergen Report, a showcase for wealth strategies and investment wisdom that's essential for our evolving world. I'm your host, Bart Zandbergen. With me today, the Robin to my Batman, my business partner in crime, Letitia Birbaum. Letitia, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me on the show. As usual, running in right as it starts.
Now,
right?
You didn't have to expose that. They didn't know you came racing in 2 seconds before the show. They didn't know that.
I'm here on time.
Hey, Paul, how was your week?
My week was good, but it was nothing compared to yours. You're telling me you went to the famous Laguna Seca race car track to watch the old vintage cars, and then you went to the Concourse d'Elegance up in
Pebble Beach, Monterey. Yeah, wow. It was quite a weekend. Yeah, we could spend a whole episode talking about investing in cars.
Favorite car? What's your favorite car takeaway? Any that popped out? And you saw that you said, wow.
Well, I kind of bleed Porsches, so there was a few of those that I really liked. But there were some concept cars, something that resembled a very cool-looking Batmobile.
Ooh, yeah.
Fun!
The Paganis, the Bugattis, so the Italian.
How about the new Bugatti? What is it, the Chiron or the other name here? It's a $3 million car. If it doesn't go 280, take it back.
Yeah. There. Yeah, so the takeaway of the weekend was 500 is a new 300. So if it doesn't have 500 horsepower, we're not really interested.
Okay, all right.
So very, very cool.
Where people just racing by.
Yeah, we had one night where actually they blocked off one of them, the Cannery Row in Monterey.
Sure.
And they warned us before that it's quite an extravaganza. So we walked down the street, just solid cars. No electric cars, not accepted at that event. The engines were insane. It was quite a great time.
All right.
Well, get into something else business related. We're going to talk about business exit strategies, something that Tish and I have had some significant experience in over our careers as we have helped clients move from point A to point B, whether they sell their company, retire, or something to do with that. So we call it a liquidation event. So I think what we're going to focus on today is really the liquidity event that happens with a business exit strategy. Probably one of the good places to start is, what does that mean? I think a case study is probably one of the best examples. And so I have some clients, they were partners, and they had started a company about 20 years ago. Out of the garage, which is one of the best success stories. I love these. No college education, doesn't matter, but I think it's worth a point. And over the years, they developed, they went from just a business to franchising the business to a point where they were able to sell the company for significant money. Matter of fact, enough money that they are all financially prepared for the rest of their lives.
So it's a great success story, by the way.
One of the best. So part of the process is, or part of the at least the thought process is, how do you get there? Well, as you get closer to that event, so we're not going to talk about starting a company, we're not going to talk about the strategies, but I think what we'll focus on is, hey, we know at some point we want a liquidation event, we want out, and how's the best way to do that? One of the things that Letitia and I have learned is you need some time, right? It's not something you wake up one day and say, hey, let's sell the company this year. Now, you certainly can. You're going to miss, I think, some really critical and important tax strategies. Some crucial just strategic strategies. So
you're talking about time for planning, making sure that you have a well-drafted plan.
Exactly. So
what are some of the other strategies that, okay, so a business owner says, great, now I want to sell. What are some of the things that they can do to put themselves together to sell? What are some of the steps?
Perfect. So one, I think, is getting a great team.
Okay.
Right? So the team should exist of kind of depending on the direction you go, but an investment banker who specializes in mergers and acquisitions, because you either be one of three things. You'll either be acquired, which means you're selling.
Yeah.
You'll either merge with another company, a little bit different than acquiring, and or you'll have maybe, depending on the company, maybe you go public.
Right.
So those are three primary. Each of those certainly takes time. So mergers and acquisitions / investment banker. Clearly, obviously, a good CPA. And someone that has some experience with
exit
transition.
Strategy.
An exit strategy.
Okay.
Certainly an attorney.
What type of attorney?
So it may be more than one, certainly one that understands contracts, buy-sell type contracts, and then one who is also experienced in the actual process of selling. And then, of course, we cannot forget financial advisors, one that can help the actual individuals or team that are selling the company and make sure that they're properly prepared themselves for what is going to happen and then where they will be thereafter.
Like analyzing a cash flow.
Exactly. And I think we'll talk about that. We'll kind of make that a little bubble and we'll talk about kind of the process afterwards. But for the time being, we're kind of on the pre-sale.
That's their team. So I have a question. This is always, I feel like, up to debate and you never know. What's your thoughts on, so the business owner or business owners have their idea and wanting to sell. Now they have their team. Now, do they talk to their team individually or do they think of their team as a group and then have them kind of coordinate?
I think the best, and at least my experience has been, the team is definitely coordinated. Each one needs to have, utilize the expertise of the other. I think there's going to be some synergies. So I really think that the combination and the communication between the teams is super important.
So it's like their think tank.
Pretty much, yeah.
Cool.
All right, so somewhere in the very early stages, then now you've got your team. Now you know you want to have this liquidation event. How about valuation? What is my company worth?
Yeah.
Many people think their company is worth, company or practice or whatever the entity is worth a lot more than it probably really is.
Yeah.
I think a lot of us are in denial and or have these grand illusions.
Well, they've worked so hard to build something, so they feel like it has this intrinsic value, but now how do they put that together?
Exactly.
That someone else is willing to pay for.
And someone asked me that it was my son, my older son asked me once, I even forget what the subject was, or what the topic was, but he was like, "Hey, Dad, what's the value of that?" And I'm like, "Whatever someone's willing to pay."
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And it could be determined by the day, the year, the circumstances, the economy. Just like take a house, take a stock, what you and I do, take a stock or a mutual fund, what's it worth?
Right.
Whatever someone's willing to pay for it.
Something I would add to that. So I would say my experience, and I'm sure you've had experiences too, I've taken company owners and they go through this process. I've seen, depends on what industry you're in. Each industry has its own valuation process. Maybe they have a 2X or 4X, or maybe it's a revenue generated number that they look at, and that's how they do it, or how much accountable assets they have on, or receivable, depending on what their line of business is. Oh, and then in addition, I've seen people, so first they look at their industry and what their industry kind of standard is. And then on top of that, I've seen people use someone specialize in giving them a professional valuation that looks at the big picture.
You know, of course. It could be any of that. I think once the valuation is established, then the determination of maybe who's going to buy.
Yeah.
And who will in part determine how it's sold. And here's what I mean by that.
So give me examples of who.
Yeah. So how about, depending on the type of business, but let's say it's just a small family business, could be a family member, it could be a child of the owners, of the parents or the owners. We've seen a lot of key employees. Mm-hmm. They are maybe the continuation plan for the current owners to say, hey, I'm going to groom this person so they can take over.
Mm-hmm.
If it's something maybe at a higher level, a bigger level, maybe a competitor, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then lastly, close to, I think, the competitor, but private equity firms that are in the business of buying companies, holding them for a bit, maybe putting some lipstick on it, fine-tuning, creating more value, and then turning around and sell them again.
Right.
So in the case of our clients, not only did they sell, they sold to a private equity firm, they left some money or stock into the deal so that should it get sold again, they still have a possibility and a probability that they'll make more money depending on the value that the company is sold for.
Right. But we've had clients experience all of them, right? So I've had clients that experienced a family sale and then how you structure that sale all depends on knowing what type of client you want to sell to. And I feel like that's kind of the groundwork, like what you just said. Who is your who? What's your who? Who is that person you want to sell to? And once you determine that, then you kind of can go from there and determine how you want to sell, who's it going to benefit, and how do you structure that long term?
Yeah, which is a great lead-in, is the best method to sell. And there are certainly tax strategies that are involved with that. But then there is also, what's the best confidence that I'm going to get my money for the firm?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So if it's a smaller firm, sometimes we talked about the family member, the key member, something called an installment sale.
I would just want to stop you just for 1 second. So you know that we're not CPAs, so you always want to make sure you have your CPA on.
That's right.
On your team, and also make sure you always reference this back to a CPA as well. So go ahead, Bart.
All right, thanks for the disclaimer there.
We're going to go into
this is not advice to do some installment
sale. We're going to do some strategies here. We want to make sure we're protecting everyone here on the radio and listening to all the options and ideas.
So an installment sale does two things. One, it might get you a higher value on the firm in that you're telling the buyer, hey, instead of giving me the money today, pick a number, 5 years or 10 years, that's how much time you have to pay me out.
Yeah.
Normally there's interest charge. Two things are accomplished there. One, you've deferred taxes. Mm-hmm. Again, consult your CPA. But instead of getting all the money at once, let's just make it easy. Let's say it's a $10 million sale.
Yeah.
Instead of getting $10 million in year one, if you do it over 10 years, you're going to realize gain. Again, that kind of goes on what your cost basis is, et cetera, but just on a very easy basis, basically income of $1 million a year instead of $10 million in 1 year.
Yeah.
So I think that's it's very common and it's been great for smaller companies. It looks
and
like,
it's nice for an income stream over a long period of time, too, because in that way, maybe it's offsetting some of your normal expenses that you would be.
Exactly. And we know someone going through that right now.
Yeah.
Okay. Paul tells us we need a little break, so we'll be back in just a moment.
Imagine what it would feel like to lose everything. Your job, your home, your family, your dignity. This has happened to thousands of the men, women, veterans, and young adults we serve at Working Wardrobes. What do we do to help? We provide career development services, life skills workshops, job skills training. We provide the perfect interview outfit, and we get clients placed in jobs. Call Working Wardrobes, 714-210-2460. Donate, volunteer, invest, hire.
When you use the Premier Rewards Gold Card from American Express, the rewards points can keep on multiplying. By 3 with triple points on airfare, by 2 with double points on gas and groceries, and a single point for pretty much every other dollar you spend on the card. Then, start choosing from over a million rewards to redeem all those points. Apply today and the annual fee for the first year is on us. Call 1-800-AXP-GOLD or visit AXPGold.com. The annual fee for the card is $175. See terms, conditions, and restrictions at AXPGold.com.
All right, back to Bart and Letitia with their exit strategies here. And can I ask one as a small business owner myself?
Yeah, let's have it.
We had somebody in here a while ago, and he said, the minute you form a business, you should think about selling it. I can't believe most of us do that. I haven't done it. I probably won't think about it until they're carrying me out feet first. And I'm like, oh, boy, I should have thought about this. You know, what am I going to do with it?
Yeah.
Do you close it? Do you give it to your kids? Do you sell it to somebody? And when do you think about it? Just when you're ready to go or 5 years before you're ready to go or 5 minutes after you start?
You want to start? You want me to start?
Yeah, you can start.
Yeah.
This is going to start a fight here.
I know, right? We have different opinions
again.
On that. Yeah, here we go. So I always say, I'm a planner at heart, and I know Bart is here as well, but I always say when you're starting something, always know, is this something that company that you want to nurture for a long time. Sometimes people start a company and knowing that maybe it's just a short term, they want to build it up and then turn around and sell it. So some people have different strategies with setting up their business in the first place. But that also being said, you should always have a backup plan because if something were to happen to you, who's going to run the company? Who's going to take care of your family? Who's going to process the outstanding orders that you have? So always planning, I feel like, is so critical. And knowing in the back of your mind, I want to do X, Y, and Z, but never doing anything doesn't help the people that you care about or your employees if something does tragically happen to you. And I've seen that poor planning has affected people and families. Maybe they have to have a rush sale when they're not happy about it. So that's, you know, you don't want to be caught with your pants down for sure. So I always say plan. So even have something and know you can change it. At least you have something in place that way.
So you're saying day one, and you and I are going to go form a company tomorrow, and immediately we're going to talk about how we're going to get rid of it someday here? Our baby, we're going to grow over
maybe,
our lifetime?
Maybe not the first day, but you should definitely, you know, it's established. Once you know that this is going to work and it's going to continue, maybe you know right away, sales spike right away, and you're like, this is a hot product, people love it, then yes, you come up with a plan right away. I mean, you don't want to spend a ton of money on exiting strategies and it's just starting and it's a money pit and it's not profitable yet. So once it's profitable and you know it's a longer term thing, then yes, I would say
spoken like a millennial, already thinking how you're going to get out of the deal.
So I, on the other hand,
opposite.
No, I won't say opposite. Two things. One, I am a big believer in begin with the end in mind. So that does signify some planning. But I'm also a believer of never say never, never say always. So it's to your point, and I'm going to agree, it's kind of a case by case. If you're doing something where you're selling widgets, you might know that, hey, these widgets are going to be valuable for 5 years and then I'm out.
Yeah.
The other thing we've seen in business is, our industry as well, is it a lifestyle business or is it an enterprise?
Mm.
So a lifestyle business is one, hey, you know, we can make a great income and get to a point where, I don't know what the industry is, I'll pick some other one, but don't need any more clients. I just need to show up and it works and it's something I can just do until they take me out by my, drag me out by my feet.
Correct.
On the other side, the enterprise is something, hey, I'm growing this. I'm going to make it 2, 3, 4, 5 times X. And then I know I'm out.
Yeah.
So that's all part of the planning, but I don't think it's an every case thing.
But also to say I'm going to add another piece is in the first situation is if it was say it was our industry, if you didn't have a plan, your poor clients, what would they do if you didn't have that plan? So they would want to know that there's other things in place. So that way they would be taken care of no matter what.
And to that, regarding our industry, and we're not alone, but evaluation of our industry is higher if there's a backup plan, if there's a number two, if there's a continuation plan. Without one, the valuation of business is a lot less.
Interesting. I never heard that. So I have to ask the tough question that everybody's asking right now.
Yeah.
Do you guys have an exit plan?
Yes.
Yeah, we do, actually.
Do you? Okay.
Yeah. It's required.
All right. So kind of circling back, we're talking about different ways. We talk about installment sale. I think before we get into more, something that I missed talking about earlier is the type of sale. And by type,
how do
I mean
structure.
Is it a stock sale or is it an asset sale?
Okay. Can you explain what each of those are first before you talk about the advantages, just in case the listener doesn't know?
Yeah. So a stock sale is basically, and we're going to caveat this with CEO or CPA for any tax advice, but a stock sale is you have a corporation and you are basically selling your shares in the corporation. If I'm 50% owner in a corporation, I'm selling my company, I'm selling, and then there's another 50% partner, we're each selling our 50% shares to the buyer.
Got it.
So they're buying the liabilities of the company, they're buying the customers, they're buying the fixtures, the office, the brand, everything.
Got it.
The other is an asset-based, and that would be you're forming, you can use the same name, but you're forming a new corporation, but you're buying the assets of the firm. It could be the client list, it could be the brand name, could be the computers, but you're not touching the corporation, the shell, which from a liability standpoint alone would certainly be advantageous to the buyer, because any kind of tail liability or lawsuits would technically follow the seller. And see your attorney for any more specifics on that. But that's kind of the generalities.
Okay. And why would you choose one versus the other, a stock sale versus an asset sale?
So there's going to be competitive, competing, reasons. You know, the seller is going to be motivated by a stock sale.
Why?
Because the stock sale will allow them, one, to get rid of the liability, right? Because that goes to the new owner.
Got it.
And from a tax perspective, they're selling their stock. And as you and I know, when you have a stock, you have a basis.
Mm-hmm.
And then anything over basis, if you have it over a year, is long-term capital gains.
So it could potentially help them with their taxes.
Could be a tax advantage.
Nice.
On the asset sale, if we stay... Oh, and then on the buyer side of a stock, after-tax dollars, you're just buying in. So there's no inherent tax advantage.
Got it.
Flip it. Now it's an asset-based sale. The seller has no tax advantage. It's now ordinary income.
Okay, which is a higher tax bracket.
Higher tax bracket by today's standards. Mm-hmm. And the buyer can deduct the amount of the sale. So if it's an installment sale, they're deducting the amount of the payment every year. And of course, they don't have the liability. So
is these usually under negotiation? They go back and forth, or usually they're set in stone?
I've seen it as a negotiation, and it certainly affects the price. If the seller knows that, hey, I'm paying ordinary income and not capital gains, guess what?
Yep.
You're going to ask for a higher price,
right?
And vice versa. And usually, with the right advisors, both sides know what they're dealing with. So there's a price that's a little bit higher that the buyer's willing to pay, knowing they're going to get a deduction, a little bit less than what the seller was going to take, knowing that they may have a better tax break.
Usually, at the end of the day, they land at the right
somewhere.
Number.
A lot of companies sell, so somehow
it always works out.
I've always earned them a good negotiation. No one walks away happy. Mm-hmm. There's got to be a little bit of pain on each side for it to be a good negotiation. Okay, so we've covered that. We talked about installment sale. There's certainly just an outright sale. Hey, I want your company for $10 million. Here's a check. Boom, $10 million. Done. Out. Right?
Okay.
Another type of a strategy that we've seen used, and it's really combining some asset protection, estate planning, tax planning tools all in one.
Oh, I'm interested.
Yeah. So CRT, Charitable Remainder Trust.
Oh, I love those.
We have used those many times over the years. By design, a CRT is a trust with a charity in which the beneficiary is a charity.
Okay.
The IRS allows for a current deduction. So it's a
in the current tax year.
Present value, current tax year deduction.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's a great highlight. And the second, probably equally as much, is now that it's in a trust, you can sell the asset in the trust, pay no taxes because it is a charity.
Yep.
And then receive an income for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. Now, usually the current rates are about 5 or 5.5% of the value of the principal for the rest of your life, the rest of yours and your spouse's life. And then ultimately at the very, very end, the charity, who's the beneficiary, will receive the proceeds of whatever's left over.
There's a couple different ways you can do that, but that's most common.
That's the most common. We can get technical. Is it a lead trust? Is it a regular forward trust?
What's the one caveat?
So the caveat is if, for the children, perhaps, of the sellers, is that should something happen to mom and dad in the first year or two, I don't want to use a negative word, but they can be seen as being disinherited because they're not getting...
Because they're giving the money away to a charity.
Now, there's an easy fix. We've had a couple of shows that have talked about the concept, but not directed to this, but a lot of people might do this and say, hey, for all the money I'm saving in taxes, I'm going to buy a life insurance policy. That's going to pay off the kids. They're now not disinherited. They've got the same value or as much value as the parents want. We are enjoying now a lifetime of income. And it really works best, I think, if there is charitable inclination. If someone has no charitable inclination, may not. Back in the early days, when I was first in the business in the early 90s, they were called wasting trusts. So instead of the 5%, you could start out taking 15% a year. So at the you really didn't have to have a charitable intent because within 10, depending on the growth rate, 10, 15 years, it's down to zero. You've taken all your money out. You've sold your stock tax-free. So it's a super valuable tool for selling your business. It has to be corporation, right? It has to be stock.
I was going to say, but there's something else. Can I do it like 5 years later? Can I do it 2 years later? Can I do it in the middle of the sale? Do I have to do it before?
No. And yes. And the yes being the CRT has to be established in the year you get the deduction. And it has to be established before you sell the company. So you've
that's really important. So say that again.
So it has to be established in the year of the deduction and before the sale is consummated because you've actually transferred ownership. So if I own shares of ABC, I've transferred the ownership to the trust. Now I'm the trustee and I have some management capabilities, but I'm not the owner. So one, there's an asset protection, and two, that's where both the charitable contribution and the tax deduction. And let's not forget how important that is. And just so we're clear, the tax deduction, if you put $10 million of stock in and you're 60 years old, the IRS is, I mean, they're Well, they're not that kind. I'm going to say they're kind, but they're not that kind. So you're not going to get a $10 million deduction. They're going to say, well, your life expectancy is 85, so we're going to do a 25-year present value. So instead of $10 million, again, I'm not going to be exact, but maybe you're going to get a $6.5 million deduction.
So you're getting complicated. So I want to make sure. How are people, instead of going into all the numbers, how do people find out how to use this? They have to clearly use an attorney and someone like yourself as well. So would they just reach out to like you or their financial advisor and say, okay, this is what I'm interested in doing, and it's part of that planning process?
And so I think it goes back to the team, you know, the CPA, the attorney, the advisor, and the investment banker working together. Because if it's not the right company formation, they can't do this. With enough planning, and to Paul's point earlier, let's say we know 5 years from now we want to sell, and maybe we're the wrong business entity, and then we can say, okay, let's form a corporation knowing that this is what we want to do.
Part of that planning process, you're part able of to put planning. It in place, then you can have it set up correctly.
Exactly.
So we don't run out of time. Do you want to tell them our part, what we do for the exit strategy?
Sure. Actually, why don't you tell them what we do? You haven't talked very much today.
I know. You're doing great. I feel like you've got all the answers. You don't even really need me here. I feel like the best part that we are able to do is give sound advice, and also we run the numbers and make sure that the numbers work for the business owner. And we have helped business owners actually walk away and get better deals because of financial planning process. And we're able to say, okay, this sounds crazy, but will this deal, and it sounds like a big number, but after taxes and after taking away your income and taking away your expenses that the company was maybe paying for you as an owner, your net number, is that going to be enough money to be able to cover your comfortable lifestyle for the rest of your life or till age 90, 95 for you and your spouse? Mm-hmm. Is that realistic? Mm-hmm. If not, then either you shouldn't be selling it if you need that income, or do you need to sell it to a different buyer and raise your equity and maybe go back and have a higher price? So we help with that process, and we use tools and software to be able to analyze those numbers for you and kind of pick it apart and say, what about this? What if we did that? Or what if we did this? And we help analyze that. So I feel like it's critical what we do, and we can make a big difference and help their longevity and their lifestyle.
Yep. And I think part of that too is, and we could have a whole show, I think, just on that when we talk about family index.
Yeah.
If X amount of money comes in, the tendency with any investor is, hey, let's get stock market returns. But at the end of the day, if we determine that with this amount of money and your current lifestyle, even if you embellish it and make it up, you only need a 4% return.
Right.
Why in the world are we trying to get 8 or 10 and take the risk that goes along with that?
Right.
But that's what part of our planning process will do.
Yeah. We look at the holistic approach, like we've talked about in some other episodes, but we look at everything, wealth management and risk and estate planning, and we work with your team and taxation to kind of put it all together.
Right. Well, before we close up, Leticia, you want to tell everybody how to find us?
Oh, my goodness. So I would be pulling my phone up and showing you on my app here that I listen to it even later. And I go back and say, okay, this was a great tip. This is an area that I can change. I go on OC Talk Radio. And then I click on the button that says Zanbergen Report. Our logo has changed, so Paul here is going to fix and change our logo here shortly.
Okay, all right.
We're on Podbeam and iHeartRadio and iTunes. And you can also email Bart or I and find us on all of our social media sites. We're excited that we're here for you guys. And if you have any questions, reach out, because that's where we get great content is from you guys.
All right, Paul, any closing statements?
You got me scared again. I got to start thinking about this stuff. I don't want to think about it till much later. Much later.
All right, everyone. Well, thanks so much for everyone for tuning in, and we look forward to seeing you back in the studio next week. Have a great week. Cheers.
Thanks,
tune in next week for the latest edition of the Zanbergen Report, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Catch up on our recent shows by visiting www.bartzanbergen.com. Interested in being a featured guest on our show, or have a question you'd like to hear us answer on the Zanbergen Report? Email podcast@bartzanbergen.com.
The Zanbergen Report is a production of OC Talk Radio and is provided for educational purposes only. The content of this program and the views of the guests should not be considered as recommendations by OC Talk Radio or investment advice from the host, Bart Zandbergen, or any other entity attached to this production. Investors should always consult qualified financial, investment, tax, or legal professionals prior to investing.